get good help these days.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting.
Time is on my side. It's getting better all the time.
The time of your life.
Hey, a little montage as we get on time. Some of us are. Maybe he changed his clock already. No, then he'd be early. I don't know. Who knows? Good evening. Welcome to Erie House Radio. I'm Dale Cave from Spook Show, accompanied by
Dave Bigley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie, and Weirdly Really Bad Movie too, I guess, and Spaceship One. And we're here by ourselves.
Yeah, and for the moment. And the goat.
Yep,
so
yep.
At least there's still three of us. As we
That's right.
Present some old-time radio goodness.
Oh, the problem with Goat is he does have a lot to say, but it's usually the same thing.
Yep.
So.
And this is, this is the weekend for drop your socks and grab your clocks and change them.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
I mean, I do drop my socks, but it's only at nighttime.
Yeah. And grab your clocks and change the time. That'll be tomorrow night.
Yep.
Don't do it tonight or you'll be all messed up.
No. You'll be an hour tired and an hour early tomorrow if you do that. No, it's Sunday at 3 a.m. Set your alarm to get up at 3 a.m. to turn it back an hour to 2 a.m.
Yeah, no,
but
I'm not doing that.
When you do that, don't forget to turn off your alarm because then at 3 a.m. will come around. Go on again. You'll go back and turn it back another hour. You'll be there 2 hours, or you could be there till 10 o'clock in the morning, turning your clock back to 2 a.m. if you're not careful.
Or you could get a time machine, get caught in a loop, and then just the rest of your eternity, you'll be changing the clock. Maybe that's the secret to living forever. Who knows?
It could be. I don't think being caught in that kind of a loop would be – I don't think being caught in any kind of a loop would be a good thing.
No, that would be some people's version of Hades.
That would be Groundhog Day,
exactly.
In everyday life. I don't think I would want that.
Nope. But as is our want to do, we're bringing you some time travel and time-related radio programs. What? I made you giggle.
I'm just trying to figure out what the heck you said. Okay.
I use the King's English. I think I'm good. We got two.
We ain't in England, matey.
Right. Two, count them. Two. Why only two? Because we got a lengthy one for you.
Yeah, a lengthy one.
Scene Ear Theater.
And I have to tell you, I always thought this was connected to the Sci-Fi Channel. When I first heard about it, I thought through the Sci-Fi Channel, and it was on sci-fi.com. Come out and find out later as that actually it was an internet-based drama reenactment troupe attempting to capture the feel of the older sci-fi radio plays. The content was originally maintained on sci-fi.com website. It ran from 1997 to 2001. Gone, I tell you. But episodes can be found on Internet Archive and Radio Echoes, all kinds of different places. But I really thought this was truly connected with Sci-Fi Channel, but it wasn't. So,
it is not. I think I stumbled on some of the same sites you did because I did a wee bit of research, not a whole lot. Because I had not heard of Seeing Your Theater before, And I'm about to learn some about family theater tonight, too, I think, with another program.
Yeah, we have had one family theater on back on UFOs. We did a family theater on that. We have one on a time travel piece tonight. But I did know about sci-fi theater when it was around, or seen ear theater when it was around, because I did have an original copy that I recorded off the computer on a cassette and was listening to in evenings of this particular story that we have tonight, a classic H.G. Wells story. It'd be interesting to see what they do with that classic story.
We'll get into the start time, but I just wonder how it compares to one of my favorite adaptations is the 1960 movie with Rod Taylor and Yvette Mignot.
It seems to go in a different vein of that, because how can you go wrong with Alan Young being in there, you know?
Oh, my gosh. He's the greatest. Scrooge McDuck.
And Scrooge McDuck on top of everything else. Absolutely.
Yeah.
As well as Wilbur, you know?
Yes.
Wilbur Post.
A lengthy career from old-time radio on to movies, television, and what have you, cartoons.
A young Canadian who had his own radio show way back when, the Alan Young Show, which was kind of a sitcom. And I remember him, first time I think I heard him on the radio was on a program called the Globe Theater, where he did a show called "And Nothing But the Truth."
So, my man gets around.
He did. He had a good long career. He did the pilot for Mr. Wonderful.
Oh yeah.
He did not want to do the series. And I'm not even sure the series lasted a full season. Did it? Was that one of those?
I can't respond to it.
Okay, it's on YouTube. The original pilot that he did is on YouTube. He was a shoe salesman, and I think it's Ed, the guy who did You Drive on Twilight Zone. That's not Edward Andrews, but that guy. And he was going to be the boss in the show. They shot the pilot, and you couldn't tell me he didn't like doing it because he made it look real.
Yeah.
Kind of a hero. What was that one that took the pill to become a superhero?
Is that the guy that used to flap his arms?
I'm not sure. I do know the one shadow guy, the Avenger.
Did Chicken Man take a pill? I don't think so.
No. He just put on his chicken costume.
That was from, I don't know, the 60s, right?
Anyway, you can check that out on YouTube. Maybe I'll get down here and try and find a link to it and post it into the group. But it was fun. Somebody else did take the role, but it didn't. I don't think it ran a full season even. So
you're wonderful. There you go. And so we've got Time Machine and a strange title for family theater.
Yeah, it is a strange title. The title being
At 155 pounds.
So what would you think that was about?
For me, that would be about 50 years ago.
I might have been
at 155 pounds.
The story. Actually, as you might guess if you weren't Dale Kay, it's about a boxer.
Ah. In time. And space.
A boxer in time, yes.
Yes.
Or is he out of time? We will have to tune in to find out.
He does get a count, so we'll find that out. Win or lose, there's going to be a count.
That's true.
Unless it's a draw with no knockdowns. Oh, whatever. we'll find all that out when we hear Family Theater.
Yep. I'm kind of sneaking through here to try and find the somewhat date. And, of course, now I don't see it here. may have to bring it. Well, again, there's no exact dates because these were released to the internet at specific times. It seems to have run 1997 with a Harlan Ellison episode through till like 2001. So they weren't at a regular release date. I think when they got them, got the scripts and got them worked out is kind of when they kind of released them. And like I said, really into it. We have another one coming up too, which would be pretty cool because coming up in a week or two, we have one that stars Mark Hamill.
No way.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes,
bad news, Gar won't be in tonight. He is feeling rather poorly, not for the usual reasons, but a good reason, and hoping to feel better tomorrow, naturally, because he's going to be doing Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul right after our show tomorrow. But tonight,
right.
Again, so our love, get well soon, brother.
And, yep, absolutely.
And we'll just wing it like we always do. We might as well start with Family Theater. What do you think?
In trouble. Yeah. This full hour production of this, or just slightly longer than an hour all put together. And looking here, the date is unknown. This was an H.G. Wells story adapted by Charles Potter, whoever Charles Potter is.
So we're starting with the time machine then.
Well, let's start with the time machine. This is not, make sure we get everything in here. We'll get the
Fair
time
enough.
Machine.
This one's a four-parter, gang, and this is part one from the approximate date of?
Of unknown between 1997 and 2001. How's that?
Ooh.
Weena?
Weena.
Oh. There you are.
The horrible name.
Stars in-house.
Nah, Weena. Diamonds. Diamonds under glass.
Diamonds?
Stones.
Stones? So bright. Like stars.
Very pretty, yes. Weena smiles.
Weena has?
Sure. If I can get them out of there. Let's see. This chair will do it. Here. For Weena. To wear.
Oh, again. Oh.
Ow, careful. Oh, you cut yourself.
Oh, hurt like fire.
Here, hold finger. So.
So. Fire hurt, Weena.
Yes. Come on. Find real fire.
Fire here?
I hope so. And tools.
Tools?
Yes, to open doors. Then you and I, then Weena and Sam, go. Leave Morlocks. Come.
The Time Machine, August 14th, 2003. A statement of Herbert G. Wells in the matter of the disappearance of his friend Samuel Lyman of the town of Cold Spring. Testimony made in my presence, Detective Johnson, and of two police officers of the town, and recorded by Mabel Milrod, town clerk.
First of all, you have to understand that Sam was something of a recluse. So when he called to invite me over to his house, I was a bit surprised. This was in January of 2000, right after the big millennium thing. I remember that because he said, I'm going to show you something that'll really put this year in the history books.
By that, he meant this time machine thing, huh?
Well, I suppose so. Now, at any rate, I didn't know what he was talking about at the time.
Right. Go on.
Well, when I showed up, I discovered that he had invited some other people, too. There was Arliss Kellett, who had been our science teacher in high school, and Willie Flores, who used to work with Sam at Bernard's Auto Body. And then there was this guy from the city, Jay Hoffman, his name was. He was a patent attorney or something like that.
That's right, and Bernie said good things about you, too.
Really? That's great. Come on in. Jay, this is Herb.
Hi there. Good evening.
Herb edits the local paper, and Arliss Kellett, our former science teacher. Recently retired, right?
That is correct. Good evening.
And this here is Willie Flores, who knows more about your car's onboard computer than the company that built it.
Hi, Willie.
Hi.
In fact, Willie here has been helping me design a device that will bring a whole new dimension to travel, even if he doesn't know what it is we've created.
That's true.
Why don't you make yourselves at home here? Don't mind the clutter. And don't go peeking there, Willie. I'll show you guys what's under the spread in just a moment.
All right.
But first, you have to listen to what I have to say very closely. And let me warn you that I'm about to turn a few widely accepted ideas on their ears. First off, the geometry we're all taught in school is based on a misconception.
That seems a pretty broad statement to begin with, Sam.
I promise I won't ask you to accept anything without a reasonable explanation, Miss Kellett. Now, you know that a line of thickness nil, has no real existence, right?
Right.
Neither has a geometrical plane. These things are merely abstractions.
Okay, I'm with you so far.
Nor having only length, breadth, and thickness can a cube have a real existence.
Now, there, I object. Of course a solid body may exist. All real things...
So have... most people think. But wait a moment. Can an instantaneous cube exist?
No, I don't follow you.
Can a cube that does not last for any time at all have a real existence? No. Clearly, any real body must have extension in four directions. Length, breadth, thickness, and duration. Now, because we can see and feel the first three, we tend to draw an unreal distinction between the first three of these dimensions and the fourth dimension, which is time. Have you heard what is being said lately about the fourth dimension?
I haven't followed this much since I read Einstein.
You mean like that professor, what's his name, Larry Brill at Columbia?
Bingo.
The curve in the sky. I heard that guy on Newsline. Awesome.
I agree. I've been working on four-dimensional geometry myself for several years now. Some of my results are pretty exciting.
But wait, if time really is a fourth dimension of space, why has it always been considered as something different?
And if it's the same kind of thing as height and width and depth, why can't we move about in time the way we can move in the other dimensions of space?
Exactly.
The answer is, we can. I mean, for real.
But that's impossible.
I promised I wouldn't ask you to believe any unreasonable assertion, Arliss, and you can hold me to that.
I'll try, anyway.
But if I can make something real move in time before your very eyes, will you believe me then?
I guess so. Sure.
How about the rest of you?
Uh-huh.
Oh, all right.
I'll drive you straight to the U.S. Patent Office myself.
All right, then. Behold.
Let me get a good look at that.
Very precise work, whatever it is.
Unusual shape.
The object Sam showed us had a glittering metallic framework, and it was about the size of a large clock. There was ivory in it, and some transparent crystalline substance. In the center was what looked like a small XP handheld computer.
Well?
This is only a model, but I believe it is a working model. You can see that this bar appears to pulsate slightly. That's because it holds a powerful ion charge, which is the power supply. You will also notice that the frame is solidly built. In the full-sized machine, a man would sit here. You can see the two control sticks, here and here.
Great work, man. It's gorgeous.
Thank you, Willie. Willie helped me modify the motherboard in the computer there.
So does this model do something?
Let's just say, I hope it does.
You haven't tested it already?
No, I haven't. But because it took a lot of trouble to build and because it is too small for anyone to ride on, I have asked you three to witness its operation and tell me what you think.
All right.
Well, fire it up, man.
You mean you really think it will travel in time?
I do. But first, take a good look. Look under the table. Don't touch the controls. When you are absolutely satisfied there is no trickery planned, I'll send it off.
We all looked at the machine very hard. And I know that, for my part, I had no doubt that the machine was, as Sam would have us believe, a real object sitting on a table.
Now, if I may borrow your finger then, Herb?
Huh? Sure, I guess.
Press here.
There was a breath of wind, and the little machine suddenly spun around on its base and was seen as a swirl of faintly glittering brass and ivory for perhaps a second or two. And then it was gone.
just disappeared. But
where did it go?
That would be the $64,000 question, wouldn't it?
And you want us to believe that that little thing went off traveling in time all by itself?
That's right.
Into the past or into the future?
That I am not absolutely sure of, really. You remember there was that question about the polarity of the ions versus the polarity of the chip.
Right.
But by moving the two sticks, a person riding the machine can control the direction of travel at will. Only when the two control sticks are together, as you saw them at first, will the machine remain fixed in time.
So where is it now?
It's still right there, but far in the future, or in the past, traveling through time because no one is aboard to return the handles to neutral, as it were.
Just Neil. I don't have to tell you that if what you're saying is true, your machine's going to be worth a hell of a lot more than $64,000.
But how are you going to prove that it works?
That's simple, Arliss. I plan to take a ride on a full-sized model next week.
Really?
You mean...
I mean, I have a full-sized one almost completed out in the garage.
I knew it. I knew you had a second one started.
Well, may I take a picture of it for the paper?
Next time, Herb, if it works. Right now, I want to invite all of you to return in 1 week, say next Tuesday at 6:30.
Wouldn't miss it.
Me neither.
You don't actually seem crazy, Sam, so I'll be there.
Thanks, Arliss. I'll leave supper ready. If I am not mistaken, I'll have plenty to tell you.
Of course, we all showed up early, though we needn't have bothered. Sam wasn't there. He had left a note on the front door to say that we should let ourselves in and get comfortable in the event that he was delayed.
I can't wait all night.
I just hope he's okay.
He can't have been gone for long. This food's still warm. And there are sodas.
He's not in the garage. And neither is his time machine.
Hey, cheesesteak subs. Good old Sam.
You sound like you've seen it.
Hmm. I did. Last week after you all left, he showed it to me. He had a change he wanted me to help him with.
What was that?
He wanted me to make the control sticks removable. I do machine work for him, too, over at Bernard's.
So you saw him last. When exactly?
On Saturday? Yeah, Saturday it was.
Well, we could call the sandwich place and ask when they saw him. Can't have been long ago. Here's the number.
Sam!
Well.
Good evening. I'm sorry to have kept you. Is that sandwich good, Willie?
Sure is.
How about you? You okay?
I'm fine, thank you. Although I am half-starved for a bit of meat. Pass me over one of those?
Sure, here.
He sat down at the table with real appetite. I thought I noticed him limping, and I wondered if he was injured, but he clearly didn't want to be asked a lot of questions.
Now that's more like it.
In fact, the first words out of his mouth after he devoured half his sandwich were to silence us all.
You must forgive me, but I will not last long enough tonight to argue with any of you.
But you gotta help.
I will tell you the story, but I can't argue. I must have time to rest and to think.
One word. Have you been time traveling?
Yes. I've had a truly astonishing adventure, but I guess I'd better start at the very beginning. I went out to the garage at 6 p.m. It was light out, of course. It still is now. And, as I had done many times before, I climbed into the seat of my time machine. Only this time was going to be different. I placed my hands on the control sticks and gently moved the right one forward ever so slightly. Then almost immediately I advanced the left one the same amount. I felt like I might faint. And I had that sensation of falling you sometimes feel in a dream. And then nothing. But I could see that it was dark outside now. I looked at the clock on the wall and I saw that it read 3:45. Of what day or night? I can't be sure, but I thought I noticed things on the workbench looked as they had this morning on entering the place. So I deduced that I had traveled backwards in time to the night previous. So next I steeled myself and pulled the right stick towards me, only this time I didn't bring the other one alongside it for a long time. Today came back immediately,
and I saw Willie here walk into the garage, look around, scratch his head, and walk out.
That's right, I did that.
Then, tonight came on, tomorrow flashed by, then night again, then day, and I was off into the future for real. As I put on speed, night followed day like the flapping of a black wing. The dim impression of the garage around me seemed presently to fall away, and I could see the light overhead more clearly. I supposed that the garage had been destroyed, and the time machine and I were now sitting in the open air. I wondered what would happen if someone were to build a wall right where I was sitting, somewhere in the future, but quickly put the thought aside for fear that I would lose my nerve and decide to go back. I looked down at my watch and saw that it had hardly advanced past 6:15. Since it, like I, was within the field of the machine itself, it would not change, even as I did not. The lunch I had eaten at noon was progressing normally through my bowels, I thought with some odd comfort to myself, and not some untasted future meal that I might have eaten had I stopped, when? Several centuries from today. I'm afraid I can't convey the peculiar sensation of chronic motion or time travel. I did take a small voice recorder with me along with one or two other items, a good pocket flashlight and a knife, but I did not have the presence of mind to try recording my impressions while I was actually traveling. It's definitely unpleasant at first, not unlike the discomfort I have experienced from some carnival rides I've been on. After a while, I got used to it, though. And then, it began to seem like I was on a small sailboat with a low-level headache and a kind of seasick feeling all the time. I now realized I could see the change in light from summer to winter. I counted these pulsations at about 3 per second. I couldn't see the moon and the stars at all, however. My immediate surroundings were not invisible to me, but they were mostly an indistinct blur. The familiar green of vegetation, trees and shrubs, swirled about me, sometimes quite close, but most of the time at some distance. Soon, a fresh series of impressions grew up in my mind, curiosity mainly, as well as a definite sense of dread regarding the changes in humanity that might have taken place in the ages that flickered before my eyes. And so my mind came round to the business of stopping. The danger of colliding with some object that had been placed in the same space that I wished to occupy had occurred to me before, and I had swept the worry aside. Now I began to think that I could never stop safely unless I were to return to the present. But again, I made a conscious effort to put this thought aside. I pushed hard on the left-hand stick. Too hard, probably. The machine whirled about, end over end, and I was flung headlong through the air. There was a clap of thunder close by, and I landed on soft ground.
Or his head. No. That's part one of the Time Machine from Seeing Ear Theater. Definitely a rewrite of a modernized version. I don't necessarily object. It's going well. Story.
Certainly, there's a lot of action going on in a short amount of time.
Yep. Yep. So. The basic story is similar to the George Pal movie, but different enough to make this an interesting listen. I'm enjoying Seeing Ear Theater. There, practice that 10 times fast.
Syrian Ear Theater. Syrian. Well, see, if you're down from Southern Ohio, it'd be Syrian Ear Theater, you know?
Yeah.
It would.
Okay, but in that area of the world, can you get a good cheesesteak? I suddenly have a taste for one. Oh, by the way, want to welcome Fogsbane and good old Bob to the chat. Live. Here with us now.
Hey.
Sorry, no God tonight. He's getting all his Gulade cure, hopefully.
I didn't set out myself. I have to see what's going on there.
Yep. You know, I got so mad about this time change thing, Dave. I 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, 8 o'clock.
You ate it. 8 o'clock. You got so mad. Yeah. Okay.
I did. It was very time. You know, it was very time consuming.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially when I went back for seconds.
You went back for seconds. All right.
Seconds. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Very, very.
You know,
time
the pun police are going to be after you, buddy.
Thank you, Mike Mace. he posted that earlier today.
Yeah, I still like a sign take off of the old Kennedy speech, why we went to the moon. And it goes, the sign said, we do these things not because they are easy, but because we thought they were going to be easy.
Wait, what? I don't remember Kennedy saying it quite that way.
He didn't say it quite that way. Not quite that way. Yeah.
A little different. And you got to get that Boston in there, you know?
Yes, Boston, yes.
Boston.
It was a long time ago, Boston, this.
That's very Kennedyan. A Kennedyan accent. Boston. Oh, yeah. We got a modernized version of the Time Machine tonight that I am enjoying. I like how they give you a little sneak preview at the beginning of the future that he visits. Want to see how many other similarities to the story I'm most used to. I have read, but it's been umpteen years, but I have read the original novel from H.G. Wells.
Yeah, it's been a long time, yeah.
I need to go back and dive into that. And some old Jules Verne, too.
Yeah, yeah. Those guys are just so amazing, looking into the future of some just some events and mechanisms that I don't think they were even thought of back then.
Yeah.
Maybe so. I mean, I remember they did try to have that submarine in the Civil War, and it sunk, and the guys died in it. But, you know.
But he tried. He's a pioneer.
But he tried. Yeah.
Wrong way Feldman strikes again.
Yep, yep.
Somehow I can't help feeling it was something like that.
Could be.
You know, can't fly a plane without a few crashes.
Well, you know, he went the wrong way because he wasn't allowed to go the other way.
That's true.
Then just said, oh, I got disoriented, you know? Yeah. Right. Anybody who believes that, raise your hands now.
I'll count them.
Make it both hands.
1, 2, 3, 9, 12. I'm counting hands.
Okay.
let us continue, shall we, with Seeing Ear Theater with part
we
two
shall.
Of four with the Time Machine.
There was a clap of thunder close by, and I landed on soft ground.
How?
I believe I may have been unconscious for a moment. Then a steady hail began to fall around me, on me, everywhere, and I was immediately soaked to the skin.
Oh, damn. Ow! Oh. My machine. There. Doesn't look any worse for wear. I can't believe I didn't think about the likelihood there'd be rain. Maybe I should cover the machine with my jacket. No, it's no use. The thing is soaked. I'm stupid. Stupid me. Spent all my time figuring out how to make this thing work, and didn't stop to think for 1 minute what I would do when I got here. Well, I know one thing I've got to do. Now that's better. Well, At least I thought to bring this. Testing. 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 All right. I'm standing on a lawn or in a meadow. It's hard to see. It's raining. Began as hail, the kind that could destroy an entire vintage of grapes where I grew up in New York State in the 20th century. My watch now says 2:35 a.m. That means I've been traveling for 8 hours, the time it takes to fly to Rome. Calculating my speed of travel through time at approximately 3 years per second at maximum speed, I should now be standing in the year, oh my God, 92,000. Give or take a few thousand years in either direction. When this rain stops, I'll tell you what I can see. Huh? What's that? Must have fallen asleep.
Oh, to Leanne.
There it is again, but...
I stood up and looked around. There was the time machine, now mostly dry, standing under a pleasant midday sun. I carefully removed the twin control sticks and slipped them into a pocket in my jacket. My clothes were still quite damp, and I wanted to kick myself again for not having thought to wear a knapsack with a few basic supplies.
Is that some kind of bird? Let's see. It's 5:45 a.m. Must have slept for 3 hours. Not telling what time it is here, though. Any more than I know what year it really is. It doesn't look like anyone lives here, either.
It was then I noticed the statue. It was a large figure, the top of which was lost among the branches of the birch tree I had been sleeping under. It appeared to be made of marble and shaped very much like a winged sphinx. But the wings, instead of being folded against the body, were spread so that the huge creature appeared to hover over the lawn where I was standing. The base was of bronze with a dark green patina. And it occurred to me that no one had tended it or the garden in which it stood for many hundreds of years. Then I heard voices approaching me, coming through the bushes from every direction. I could see men and women of slender build, and none of them taller than 4 or 5 feet at the most.
Hola. Ami. Mira.
Well, hello to you, too. My name is Sam.
Sam? Name?
I come from the distant past on that machine.
Machine, then?
Yes, and I am Sam.
Am Sam.
That's right. I am Sam.
Sam.
That's right. Yes.
Say.
And I'm a friend.
It say Elwan.
Elwan.
He struck me as being a very beautiful and graceful creature, but indescribably frail. His skin was tan, but not as from exposure to the sun. His color was perfectly uniform in tone, and he had not a blemish or a mark on his face or arms. He was otherwise clothed, like all his companions, in robes of the purest indigo I ever saw.
Have you any water? Drink.
La de vida. A que vos pido?
Another one of them addressed me. It suddenly occurred to me that my voice was too harsh and deep for them, so I simply nodded my head.
Listen.
At once, the little fellow reached up and gently touched my arm. He seemed reassured that I was real, and he smiled. The first man also touched me then, and smiled.
Ah, Sam Bobek, la Elman?
Sí.
This caused the rest of them to relax and smile and talk among themselves. And I noticed immediately that they tended to laugh a lot. Or to giggle, almost. In all of my days among these people whom I came to know as the Eloi, I never once saw one of them show the slightest sign of anger. I'm sitting on a cushion on the porch of a large stone temple-like structure where the Eloi, the group that found me, gathered to eat their supper and where they now appear to be going to spend the night. The little folk have been extremely kind to me. I spent much of the afternoon trying to converse with a fellow called Elman, who wasn't too difficult. Their own language is simple, the average sentence length being about 2.5 words. His hearing seemed extremely acute, and he appeared to be learning my language as quickly as I learned theirs. At sundown, they all went inside, ate supper, which consisted mainly of uncooked fruits and vegetables. Now the moon is up, and I can just make out the statue of the Sphinx about 200 yards away, where my time machine sits among the birches, and, rhododendron. I sure am glad I brought a flashlight. In fact, I have yet to see any evidence that the Eloi use fire. At all. If I wasn't certain that no such civilization as this ever existed in New York State, I might think I had traveled into the past instead of into the future. The hall behind me is entirely lit, if you can call it that, with what look like natural phosphorescent stones. The sliver of a moon gives more light than they have inside. And yet, they all seem to be having a grand time, making music and chattering away as they do, and laughing. I'm okay here, Elman. Harten. Sam Kade, in a minute. I held up one finger, then foolishly I pointed to my watch. It's a watch. It tells time. I pointed at the moon and made a sweeping gesture across the sky. Elman seemed troubled by this and asked if he could touch the watch. Say, Bobby. The dial glowed pale green. The numbers changed from 9:59 to 10 p.m. Elman drew back, then frowned.
Machine,
Say, machine. It's okay. Machine bonnet. I tried to reassure him, saying that the watch was bonnet, which I had understood to mean good in their language, but this only appeared to confuse him. He began to back away.
I'll be along in a minute.
For whatever reason, in the course of 90,000 years, mankind appears to have lost touch with technology. I see no machines or electrical apparatus of any kind anywhere, nor do I even see tools about. It's a safe bet that some were required to build this hall behind me. I wonder who did that. It isn't in the best of repair, and how do they heat it in the winter? Well, this is doubtless just the first of many mysteries to be solved. I must go inside, or my hosts may get the wrong impression. More tomorrow. It's 10:13 p.m., Sam Lyman signing off. At first light, the entire community arose and gathered together in the vast central nave of their community building. They ate a breakfast of fruit and a delightful grain they called narthex, or something like that. After breakfast, I took a walk to the top of a nearby hill. I think it was the same one we used to call Sugarloaf, and looked down to the southwest where I saw the good old Hudson River flowing southward toward the ocean. This sight reassured me tremendously, as you can imagine. I knew where I was, something I was sure the Eloi did not. Although how useless this knowledge was to be, I had yet to realize. I was also elated, because seeing that I was right where I had set out from in three-dimensional space appeared to prove I had succeeded in traveling through time. It was to be the last happy moment I spent in that age.
Must be summer from the looks of these blueberries. Huge. I wonder the Eloi haven't picked them. What's this? A well?
Hello? Hello?
Try. Why would anybody dig a well way up here? When I came back down the hill, it was just past 8 a.m. I decided to go check on my time machine. I think it must have been over here. Yes, the statue is there in that clump of rhododendrons. No, maybe this isn't the lawn. Maybe it was... No, it was here. Right here. Where the... But wait, this looks like... Yes, this is where I turn the machine right side up. And here, it looks like someone dragged it. These are definitely scrape marks on the lawn. And here's more. It looks like they're headed for the statue. And then it looks like they go right inside.
Hello in there. Open up. Hello.
You just might not want to do that. Knocking on that door, because you never know who's going to answer or what.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door there that he's knocking on. Yep. Go try it.
Yep. So I wonder if anyone before H.G. Wells considered the concept of, instead of progression in the future, regression, like this tale has suggested. Or if he's the one that first came up with that science fiction concept.
Oh, you know what? I've always wondered about that and the fact that in fantasy, which is supposed to be in the future, but they're dressed like they were back in Robin Hood days, you know?
Yeah.
I never quite understood that. It's like you said, I never quite thought of it like a regression, but that's kind of what that is. The future is a regression, really?
Take a look around, Dave. Anyway, need I say more? Probably not a good idea if I do.
As long as I don't have to look in the mirror, I'm okay, you know?
That's true. That is.
Look in the mirror once a day, as you know, when I'm shaving. The rest of the time, I'm Brad Pitt. You know, it works out that way for me.
As long as
I don't look in the mirror.
When I shave, when I get to the jugular vein, I kind of hover for a minute.
Yeah. Shall we go on, or shall we play a game?
That's one way to never have to pay another bill.
Yeah, but that leaves it for somebody else to pay. That's kind of a mess to clean up on top of that.
I was
going to
say,
you know?
It's the mess that probably, the mess is not going to be good.
No.
Because if there's a hell, my wife will be there to tell me to clean it.
Yeah, my wife will probably tell me to get up and clean it before I die. You know, get up and clean that mess you made.
Exactly.
Yes, dear. Yes, dear.
Yeah. It's got to grit our teeth. And so we have met the Eloi. We have gotten our machine stolen. That's not good. To be stuck.
No.
No.
You know, you think it was a Hyundai or a Kia, you know? And those are the hot cars to steal right now. So.
Yeah. They changed his name to Sam. the protagonist.
Yeah.
It was George in my favorite movie. And I don't recall in the novel.
Yeah, why would you change just the name, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. He did the same kind of presentation for his scientist friends, although he was met with more skepticism, especially from Sebastian Cabot, if you'll recall.
Yes, yes, very much so, yeah.
Of the validity of the idea of time travel.
Now, what did he know? He was stuck as Mr. French after this job, so.
That's right. I guess he's that's right. Always wondered about Mr. French, but
it was funny in that Twilight Zone when he was he had all white hair and a white beard. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Strange to see him that way, but yeah.
It was strange. It still strikes me as strange when I see that, even though that was even before he did the so he must have colored that just for that point, maybe because it was shot in black and white, he thought it would be more effective or something. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, it could have been, you know, the writers, too. This is what the character is. You want to be this? Dye your hair.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows?
And Mr. French isn't talking, so.
not to us.
But the actors at Senior Theater are talking to us, and they're talking about time travel.
Ooh, Segway King, Segway King.
That's how I roll, baby. That's how I roll. Part 3 of 4, The Time Machine.
Hello in there. Open up. Hello!
There's probably no one in there.
But I'll bet that my machine is! And
what? Huh. I'm...
Open the door, damn it! That machine is mine! Mine! Someone, anyone! Please! Let me in!
But this door doesn't look all that strong. Maybe I can slip the lock somehow. No. Nothing doing. I'm just going to break my knife. And there's no use in making a mess of the door, either. It'd just give them reason to be angry.
Whoever they are!
Couldn't have been the Eloi. They would have said something about it. But if it wasn't them... Who was it? I get the idea. They don't like machines, but... Maybe that's all it is. They didn't like it sitting there, so they put it inside. I better be careful how I ask. Say, Elman, Harton, it's a wonderful show, but...
Eloi, Fiona, Mato-san, Mato.
I returned to the stone house to find the Eloi preparing to hold some kind of festival or party. I soon learned that the guest of honor was to be me, but...
Sam, thanks you all. They had pitched a brightly colored tent on a lawn below their building, next to a stream that flowed swiftly down in the direction of the Hudson.
Bada, it's a Wintle. It's a witch drowning.
Say it.
Hold on, I'm coming.
The girl had gone under by the time I reached her, but she revived okay once I dragged her onto the shore and was already smiling and laughing again before I left her. That night, I asked Elwan about the time machine.
Machine?
Hey, machine, front and stature. Sam, parse machine.
Eli, not parse machine. Morlach Karna.
Morlach, sir.
Say. Morlach, front and stature.
But who are the Morlachs?
Nah. Morlach, kite tloi Eloi.
Morlachs, it seemed, were bad for the Eloi. Elwan rose as if to go, but at that moment, the girl I had rescued appeared from the sleeping aisle to the side of the hall. She seemed completely restored and wore a garland of white flowers in her hair, which glowed in the light of the stones.
It's a wintu fa wina.
Hola, wina.
Wina. Hola, Sam.
Wina drosher bisam.
Sam, na. Trema. Wina is very lovely, but...
Wina, Sam, wintu harten.
But...
Kale. Sam, bonek ploa, Wina. Kale.
This happened on the evening of the second day. From that moment, except when I expressly forbade her to, Wina followed me everywhere. She became my spokesperson and my guide. And in the next 6 days I was in that age, I learned a lot from her. Yes, I came to love her. But in the end, I wonder if it wouldn't have been better if she had drowned.
Day 3. Raining again. My biggest error, apart from not bringing a chain to lock my machine with, is not to wear a good raincoat. Preferably one with lots of pockets. More batteries for my recorder and flashlight would have been a good idea, too.
Hola. Sam, come here.
Arten, Wina. Sam, kade. Say...
In 1 minute?
Say, Wina. In 1 minute. Wina and I had our first difference of opinion earlier. Because it's raining, I decided to take a look around the inside of this place. It's huge. It's also very old. I haven't yet learned whether the Morlachs actually built it or whether it was here from before. What, before what? I'm not sure. Before the current age, when everybody still lived together, perhaps. The Morlachs live under the ground, while the Eloi live on top. Who was actually in charge, I can't say as yet. The Eloi seem powerless to get my machine back, though, so I guess sooner or later I'm going to have to deal with these other folks. That isn't going to make the Eloi happy. This morning, while Wina and I were exploring, I discovered a stairway leading down into what must be the basement of this building. Wina started to flip out. I mean, if you can imagine a lily growing pale, that's what she looked like. I thought she was going to faint for sure, so I told her to sit there while I went down. She began to wail. It was only when I showed her my flashlight that she agreed to let me go. But it was all for nothing, because right away I came to a pair of bronze doors, heavier than the one on the base of the Sphinx, and I had to turn back. But after lunch, I'm going to test a little theory of mine about the well I saw on the hillside.
This way, Wina. Come.
Wina, not pili-pili. Wina, baku.
What's that?
Wina, go slow. Eat pili-pili.
Blueberries. Say, pili-pili bobek.
Sembrana, Eloy. Sam eat blueberries, too?
Many times, Wina, on this very hill. Well, many years ago.
Too fast. Here, eat.
Hi, Sam. Wina, where do the Eloy get their food?
Food?
Pili-pili. Skorati. Kistati.
Oh, Morlock bring. Morlock take away. Kade, Sam. Sam and Wina go back?
No, Wina. I want to take another look from up here.
Look?
I was up here yesterday. I thought I saw... But, yes, there.
Lade ipse?
A building. I don't know why, but it looks promising.
What is promising?
Like, maybe I can find tools there, make fire. Kade.
We go back now? Wina coming.
On the way back, we came upon the strange dry well I had noticed on my earlier visit. Wina clearly wanted to have nothing to do with it.
Of wheel, Sam. Yes, a Morlock.
What about the Morlocks, Wina? What is it for?
Morlock had Daru. Morlock go in and Morlock come out.
Well, if the Morlock can, so can I.
Nah, Sam. Yet a Morlock.
Let Sam worry about it. Sure enough, there are handholds.
He's here. He's not Bulbeck.
Don't forget, I've got my flashlight.
Not to use the flashlight. Sam, not to get off.
What?
No. Just from we not done.
It was still light out when I began my descent, and I could see around me in the shaft for quite a while. A dull, rhythmic throbbing like heavy machinery rose in warm air from below. I had not gone far when I reached a first lateral level to my right. I paused, clinging to the rungs, and peered into the darkness. A pair of large eyes reflecting the dim light from above was fixed on me. These were the folks who had taken my machine. I must neither offend them nor act afraid.
Hello? Who's there?
The eyes immediately darted sideways, out of sight.
Not a greeting. Not aggressive either. Nothing to do, but continue.
The air was warmer now, and the sound of industry below me was growing louder. So this was what made the idyllic world of the Eloy possible. A vast underground network of tunnels and workspaces inhabited by a race of workers, the Morlocks, who rarely, if ever, saw the light.
78, 79, 100.
Who said that?
My right hand closed on the flashlight in my pocket.
We need you.
Yes, but...
Don't you know it's forbidden
to us? Forgive me, but I am not Eloy. I am Sam Lyman. I have come here from the distant past.
Please, remain where you are.
There was a scuffling, and I felt someone or something slip by me in the near total darkness of the place. I could barely make out a bipedal creature, a bit shorter than myself, but broader in the shoulders. It seemed to be pale gray in color. And I wasn't sure but what it was actually luminescent. Vanished through a door somewhere in front of me.
Shit.
I resisted the urge to leap back onto the ladder which I still gripped with my left. But to flee now would serve nothing, and I really wanted one thing and one thing alone, to get my machine back. So I stood there. All the while I waited, my mind was trying to come to grips with what was going on around me, of course. Again, it occurred to me that I had been pretty stupid thinking only about how to travel in time, and spending little or no time at all figuring out why or what I would do once I succeeded.
Had I done this for money, which is what some people might think, or for pure science and a place in history? Or was it for the fun of hanging out in the garage with Willie and building the machine? A bit of each, perhaps. But I hadn't really thought this through. Pretty dumb.
You are to come with me.
I can't do that.
Why not? You came this far, okay? You come with me.
Look, can't I just get my machine back?
First, you must talk to my boss.
Then I will get my machine back.
Perhaps. After month's end, maybe. Until then, you remain here. Huh? Come.
I can't do that.
What do you mean you can't do that? Come.
I can't see.
Good. That way you no trouble to Morlock. Now, come.
In one movement, I whipped the flashlight out of my pocket, aimed it, and switched it on. In a split second, it took my own eyes to adjust to the light. I saw the ugliest, most misshapen human-like creature. His huge eyes were tightly shut, and he was twisted up as if the light on his skin alone was enough to cause him pain.
Turn that light off.
I wasted no time beginning my ascent.
Come back!
I held the flashlight aimed downward behind me until I reached the first lateral.
That'll fix it. And there'll be more of that if I don't get my machine back.
That ought to show that crummy Morlock. So in this version, the Morlocks can speak.
Yeah, fairly intelligently as well.
Yeah, fairly. I can't help bringing this up every time we do the time machine. Of course, I always reminisce about the George Pal version. But it was fun to see that movie referenced in an episode of Big Bang Theory. And they actually had a replica of the chair, the time machine
chair.
Oh,
they did, didn't they? Yeah.
Yep. And Sheldon had a flashback dream with the Morlocks, and the makeup department did a wonderful job of making them look like the Morlocks from the movie.
Yeah, again, you would expect that from that show, The Big Bang Theory, about these complete nerds and very intelligent, nerdy guys. You would expect that, and that kind of reference and things like that.
Well, you know what? With the age of technology, they became the new power people. You know, they say women are attracted to power as much as money or looks or anything like that. And the tech people got the power now in corporate America. You got your Bill Gateses, and you got your Elon Musk's and your Facebook, whatever the Facebook guy's name is.
I know his face. I don't know why I can't remember his name.
That's not the best part to remember, I'm sure. But
yeah. Those people become very disliked. They're powerful, but become very disliked.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I'll see.
They're just jealous. They're just jealous.
That's part of it. Everybody wants to run everything. Takes a lot. Unless you have the perfect team, like I have here at Erie House. Something like that. We do have a whole lot of radio, so we better get moving along here and wrap up the time machine and see if these here Morlocks are going to get at Sam and the rest of the Eloy as we wrap up Seeing Ear Theater, The Time Machine.
Day 4, evening. I return to the surface to find Weena gone.
She'd made it back to the hall on her own, okay. She hasn't mentioned my going down into the tunnel, although I think I detected a look of relief when I returned. My exploration has given me plenty to think about, although one thing appears more and more certain. Sometime in the 90,000 years since my era, mankind has coalesced into two groups, one which laughs and plays all the time, and one that is grim and serious, one which inhabits the world of sunshine, and the other which lives beneath the earth in a network of tunnels and workspaces whose dimensions I can only guess at. Relations between these two groups are less clear to me. The Eloi depend on the Morlocks to bring them food and to clean up after them. Who knows but what the Morlocks actually built this place for them as well. Almost certainly the Eloi did not. I have yet to see one of them pick up anything heavier than a piece of fruit. I also have no idea what it is the Morlocks get in return.
Hola, Sam. Sam, come inside now?
No, Weena. Sam is fine, right here. Shh. Lovely, now.
Huh. Come inside. We nothing.
Perhaps later.
Sam, come. Moon almost gone. Yet a Morlock.
Sam has light, Weena. Now fear Morlock.
Eloi fear Morlock.
I'll be along soon.
In a minute?
The moon, which was entering its final quarter when I arrived, is now almost gone. This seems to be of some concern to my friends, the Eloi, although it may be a good thing for me. That Morlock I spoke to said nothing could happen regarding my machine until the month was out. Did he mean the new moon, I wonder? In any case, tomorrow I'm going over toward the river to inspect that building I saw over there. Maybe I'll find tools to open the door in the base of that statue. I'm not sure the time machine is still in there, of course, but I think it's worth a try. More later.
Weena? This way, girl.
Coming!
Whatever her concern had been, in the morning, Weena seemed thrilled at the idea of a walk to the river. I later realized this was because it was in the opposite direction from the tunnel opening. We saw plenty more of those as we walked, however. Weena said nothing about them.
Weena finds flowers.
Lovely. Just look at those. Some kind of foxglove.
For Sam. Here.
Oh, more for me? Here, put them in here. Harten, Weena.
Sam and Weena reach building Eta, then go in?
Eta, Weena. We go in. Wow. Unreal.
Unreal?
Very nice, big. Like a museum, I think.
What means a museum?
A place to show special things. Look here. It was once a museum of natural history, perhaps. But when it last had visitors, was anybody's guess. What? Oh, no, that's a bear. Don't worry. It can't hurt you, you see? It's safe in its own glass house. The building was designed to make good use of sunlight, though much of the glass in its windows was broken. There was lots of light everywhere. Weena? Weena? You didn't... Oh, there you are. What have you found?
See, stars. Stars in-house.
Now, Weena. Diamonds. Diamonds under glass.
Diamonds?
Stones.
Stones? So bright. Like stars.
Very pretty, yes. Weena smiles.
Weena have?
Sure. If I can get them out of there. Let's see. This chair ought to do it. Here. For Weena. To wear.
Oh, again.
Out. Careful. Oh, you cut yourself.
Oh, I'm like five.
Here, hold finger. So.
So. Fire hurt, Weena.
Yes. Come on. Find real fire.
Fire here?
I hope so, and tools.
Tools?
Yes, to open door. Then you and I, then Weena and Sam, go. Leave Morlocks. Come.
I was wrong about finding any tools, but we did find a box of kitchen matches and a showcase on the uses of natural sulfur. There were two dynamite caps as well, and my heart pounded as I knew that with these, I could blow the doors off of anything. But from the weight of them, I knew right away they were dummies, for display only. Not far away, I found a supply of paraffin wax, which I thought would make a great firebomb should I ever want to light things up down in the world of the Morlocks. I was growing convinced that the only way I would reach my time machine again was underground. Before leaving the museum, I managed to remove a leg from one of the showcases, a length of steel tube with a flat metal bracket bolted to one end. This would serve me as a weapon, if nothing else.
Weena, kill Nade, Sam. Hurry now.
What's the matter, Weena?
Itzalata Hirtendela, Knight of Long Shadows, Morlock Kade.
Morlock Kade? Where?
Everywhere. Tonight Morlock come. Take Eloy. Go.
What?
It was then that I learned from Weena, but I had only guessed that until then. This was the other half of the hideous deal that bound this world together, what the Eloy gave to the Morlocks. The answer was themselves. One night a month, the Morlocks emerged to harvest the Eloy at will.
Morlock Atke Tade. Atke Eloy. Eloy Moore.
As she told me the story, my thoughts wandered from the trail to the world below ground. The livid gray creatures I had seen. And we went a little bit off our course. I wasn't worried about this at first because I was sure we still had 2 hours of light ahead of us. Then I saw what Weena probably knew all along. On this day, the Morlocks were not going to wait until full dark. Already they were starting to appear in ones and twos outside their tunnels. For some way, I heard nothing but the crackling of twigs under our feet, the faint rustle of the breeze above, and the rhythm of our breath as we hurried on our way. But it was too late.
Stand back! You, there! Weena, get over here!
No, Sam! No use!
What the hell do you mean? Watch this!
In an instant, I had a square of paraffin out and stuck to the steel bar. I lit it.
I flew!
Fire!
The Morlock stepped back, but he didn't seem half as bothered by the light as his fellows below ground had. I considered trying my flashlight instead, but its batteries were almost gone, and now the Morlocks were all around us.
We're going to have to run for it, Weena.
Run where?
That way. You go first, that way I can see you.
Sam, go first. We are safe.
What? But that's crazy. Get back, you!
Sam saves Weena from River. Maybe Weena saves Sam.
No, Weena, no!
Weena took one step from me and was immediately seized by eager hands. She didn't resist or even cry out. I stood in frozen anguish for a second, and several other Morlocks came at me. I dove after Weena, but she was gone.
Out of my way! Go on! Get back!
The remaining Morlocks began to back away. I thought it was I who was driving them back. Then I noticed the light flickering off the trees, and I realized that my torch had set the woods on fire all around me.
Oh my God, what have I done? No!
I began to run. Of course, I wanted to get back to the statue where I still presumed my machine to be, but I had no idea where I was. Meanwhile, the fire spread rapidly.
No!
Coming up the hillside, I saw a group of Morlocks, dazzled by the light and heat, blundered straight into the flames. Their cries were awful, and I realized how completely helpless and miserable they were in the glare, and I struck no more of them.
For most of that night, I was persuaded that it was all a nightmare. I screamed and called upon whatever God might be listening, and yes, I even pinched myself in the hope that I would wake up, but it was no use. Finally, I stumbled into a stream. I thought it might be the same one from which I had rescued Weena, so I stopped and waited for dawn.
Day 7. I've now been traveling for 2 full days since leaving the Eloi and the Morlocks. The sun is growing redder and redder, and I think I'll stop soon. I still don't really know who took my machine back there. When I got back to the lawn by the Sphinx, it was just sitting there right where I had left it. I thought that was pretty weird, but on reflection, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I wasn't much use to anybody, and after I started that fire, I guess either the Eloi or the Morlocks could have concluded they'd be better off if I cleared out. I am going to stop again now, but after what happened, this time I think I'll just stay aboard and look around.
Wow. Now this is different. But that looks like the ocean. It must have risen 100 feet, or else the continent is sinking. I wonder what the water is like.
No, 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 no. No, you don't, Sam, old man.
And are you ever old? Let's see. 3 years per second times 48 hours. I must have traveled a 500,000 years. It's cold. And it sure doesn't look like mankind made it. Neither Eloi nor Morlock. I should at least climb down and collect some specimens or something. I could use a pit stop and a stretch, but I mustn't go far.
The machine was standing on a sloping beach. The lead-colored sea stretched away to the southwest toward a sharp horizon under a pale pink sky.
But what the dickens was that? Could it have been a... Yes, that's a butterfly. It's huge. I wonder if... Oh, my God, look at that monster.
A reddish mass I had thought to be a rock suddenly rose up on 8 spindly legs. It was a huge crab. Its eyes popped up on its stalks, and it unfolded 2 massive pincers.
Oh, God. Oh, baby, get me out of here. Whoa! Ow! Whoa.
I was almost too slow. The big thing got a hold of the machine with one claw and gave us a shake. It was about to go for me, but I managed to jam the steel bar in its other claw. In the next moment, we were gone. I suppose I could have killed the thing and had one heck of a crab bake before coming home. But I didn't. It somehow seemed so special to me. I know it couldn't be an endangered species, but I don't think I could ever kill something as highly evolved as that. As I traveled back here, I had plenty of time to think about all of that and my lack of attention to these things before I set out. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that nothing I was doing justified the loss of anyone's life, not one person's. At the end of human time, there was still that, the Eloi and the Morlocks both. Not even a single crab's.
No matter how big, huh?
Right.
Wow. What a story.
You wanted her, but it's yours. This food, it's the spot.
But, well, how will anybody believe it, Sam?
I don't know. How can I prove it, Alice?
Well, did you bring back any specimens?
Not from the beach, no. I do have these flowers Weena kept stuffing in my pockets for whatever they're worth.
Let me look at them.
What about the machine itself?
What about it?
Well, where is it? Is it okay?
Sure, it's out in the garage. It's a bit banged up from my little waltz with that crab, but it works all right.
Can we look at it?
Of course, that's why I invited you, Jay.
Hey, you didn't take any pictures, did you? I could really use some for the article.
No, I didn't, but I do have this.
The Eloi depend on the Morlocks to bring them food and to clean up after them.
Who knows but what the Morlocks actually built this place for them as well. Almost certainly the Eloi did not. I have yet to see one of them pick up anything heavier than a piece of fruit. I also have no idea what it is the Morlocks get in return.
Hola, Sam. Sam, come inside now?
No, Weena. Sam is fine right here. Shh.
Wow. That was Weena?
Yes, Willie. That is Weena. Because she is still there. In part of the future, she is still alive. I could go back there and rescue her again, couldn't I? Jeez, I'll be damned if I understand it all myself. Look, come on, Herb. Let's go and look at the machine, okay?
Yeah, okay.
We all went out to the garage with him, and we saw the machine. And it was exactly as he had said. There were bits of moss and something that looked like seaweed on the landing skids. I don't think Miss Kellett has ever succeeded in identifying any of the samples Sam let her take away. We all said goodnight to him. I shared a cab home with Jay Hoffman, the patent attorney. He thought the whole thing was a well-constructed lie.
And what did you think, Mr. Wells?
Well, I felt otherwise. And I spent the whole night drafting an article about Sam's story. I never published it, however. The next day, I called him up to check some of the statements in the article. But there was no answer. After several tries, I went over to his house. And by then, I suspected what I would find. There was no one there. I went around to the garage and looked inside. The machine had also vanished. That was 3 years ago. And no one has seen Sam Lyman since.
Kind of a quick ending there to the time machine.
Now, it's interesting, Dale, when you ask why did they change his name to Sam?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when H.G. Wells originally wrote it, he didn't have a name. He was simply the narrated as he was a Victorian English scientist, gentleman, inventor, living in Richmond, Surrey, and he was identified by the narrator simply as time traveler. And similarly, all except one man named Philby, none of the dinner guests actually were identified by name, but rather by profession. For example, psychologist or a physical description, for example, of the very young man. So there weren't names for these people.
Ah, an interesting way to write a piece of fiction.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Anything else we could learn from this?
I don't know. I guess we could try.
God help us. Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar because he's not here. Anyway, if you think it's really bad today, till tomorrow comes. That's all I can say.
There we go. haven't heard from him for a while. Yeah.
I like that one. Yeah.
You got a good one there. Yeah. We haven't heard from that guy for a while. I thought we'd.
We had not.
I let him come in as a code, you know, as a guest.
But yeah, I thought that was interesting, having not been seen the story for quite some time, the actual story. Yeah, nobody had names, you know. Even Jim Croce got a name. They didn't, yeah. You know.
Now, Horst didn't.
Horst no name. Oh, yeah. Horst. Yeah, that's true. The horse had, but you know, it was good to be out of the rain. So,
true.
Yep.
You know you're old when you still know the words.
And then when you forget the words, you know you're older.
Yes. He just forgot who the artist is or something. Yeah,
we forget
yeah.
something we're supposed to. We're old.
That's right.
That's an old, old tale from H.G. Wells.
1895.
Yeah. I remember in one version of The Lost World, there's a bit of H.G. Wells on silent film.
Ah, yes, yeah.
There's a lengthier version of the original Lost World.
Oh, is there? Okay.
I think I had the opportunity to show it back when we still had Erie House TV.
Ah.
Oh, it'd be so nice to bring that back again.
Someday, perhaps you will.
Perhaps, perhaps. But what we will do is bring you the last tale with what little time we got from Family Theater at 155 pounds. Originally broadcast.
Yeah. We want to go straight to that. Okay. It was originally broadcast on November 10th of 1950 and 4.
Family Theater presents Barbara Hale and Michael O'Shea. From Hollywood, the Mutual Network, in cooperation with Family Theater, presents At 155 Pounds, starring Michael O'Shea. And now, here is your hostess, Barbara Hale.
And now to our transcribed drama, entitled At 155 Pounds, starring Michael O'Shea as Ben Rocco.
You run into a lot of very interesting, you might even say peculiar people. And you hear stories, an awful lot of stories. It's what you might call part of the job. People bring their troubles to a bar, and a lot of them want to talk. Huh? I listen. Virgil didn't want to talk. Hit me a little strange at first, too, because he sure looked like a guy with a problem. Come in wearing a long face, and he climbs up on a stool near the register. Right away, I sizes him up for a guy who's going to try drinking his troubles away. So what is the order?
Give me a ginger ale.
Ginger ale?
Yeah, ginger ale. Nothing in it, just ginger ale.
Well, it happens once in a while. I fixed him his ginger ale and then went on about my business. Long about midnight, the joint empties out. But Virgil, he stays right there. He was working on his fifth ginger ale and just staring at the bottles behind the bar. Once in a while, he'd look at his watch, nod his head, then he'd go right on back staring at the bottles. It was beginning to get under my skin. So I strolled down, put an elbow on the bar right in front of him. On the wagon, Mac?
Hmm? Pardon me, what'd you say?
I says, on the wagon?
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, I owe it to Flavia to get there sober.
A wife, huh?
No, girlfriend.
Oh. Really don't solve nothing.
Hmm?
Drink, I mean.
Oh, no, I see what you mean. Nah, it don't solve nothing.
Yeah, guys all the time come in with problems trying to drown them. Don't work.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Used to try solving mine that way.
I figured you for that guy when you come in. I thought, here's a guy with a problem. First he's going to tell me all about it, then he's going to get stoned. I'll have to send him home in a cab.
Stoned? Just for having a couple of drinks there?
Yeah, drunk, you know.
Oh, drunk. Thought you meant something else.
Help you any to tell me what's on your mind, Mac?
Oh, that's very kind of you, buddy, but it's nothing I can't solve myself, though, thanks anyway, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I just thought, you know, you might want to talk, and in my line, you get used to listening, you know?
I wouldn't want to bore you with
it. No, I wouldn't be bored, no, believe me, nothing to do, no customers. Might help to pass the time, you know?
Ah, well, you might find a little hard to believe.
Mac, you gotta hear some of the stories I hear. I notice you keep looking at your watch.
Oh, yeah, well, that's all part of it, you know what I mean? I'm leaving for ancient Rome in a few minutes.
Ancient Rome? Now, when a guy says he's going to Rome, that's interesting. But when a guy says he's going to ancient Rome, makes you stop and think. I fixed the guy out of ginger ale, I drew myself a beer, and we both moved to a booth. soon as we sit down, he hauls a battered newspaper clipping out of his wallet and he shows it to me. Wanted. Young man with no friends or relatives seeking adventure, travel, grandeur to take journey and report on findings. Must be responsible and weigh less than 155 pounds.
Yeah, that's what attracted my attention. See, I answered that ad. Hey, you want to hear what happened?
Yeah, I do.
Well, see, the address mentioned is this one. The laboratory is in the same building that this bar is in. Well, when I answered that ad, I was pretty much down on my luck. In fact, you could say I was well on my way towards being a bum. No, I'm still a little surprised I got the job. Well, anyhow, you see, when I went up to be interviewed...
Just why do you think you fit the requirements, Mr. Rocco?
What do you mean, why? You want a responsible guy who weighs in less than 155 pounds, right? Mm. That's me.
Responsible, Mr. Rocco, have you been drinking?
Well, I had a short one an hour or so ago, but...
Are you an alcoholic, Mr. Rocco?
Look, buddy, just because a guy has a... Hey, what kind of interview is it?
Are you?
Now, look, you got no right
Mr.
to question...
Mr. Rocco, this is not the kind of a job we could trust to just any bum that happened along, and you do look very much like a bum to me, you know.
Well, if I look like a bum, then why don't you go get somebody else?
Because, Mr. Rocco, you're the only one who answered the ad.
Oh.
Are you an alcoholic, Mr. Rocco?
Okay. I am not a alcoholic, but you might say I'm training to be one.
Training?
Yeah. See, I was engaged to a girl, but she wanted a big guy, so she marries my best friend. Couldn't stop thinking about that girl. Started hitting the bottle. Then I started hitting people. Now, when you're a professional fighter, that's not so good. If I use my fist on anybody in the state, it's assault with a deadly weapon.
How long ago did this all happen, this romantic trouble?
Hey, talkative. Look, maybe it's my turn to ask a few questions. What kind of deal is this?
It's time travel.
Did you say time travel?
That's right. We are going to send you to Rome in the year 134 A.D.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? It's been nice talking to you.
Oh, wait a minute.
Mister, you're daffy.
What makes you think so?
Mister, time travel is a science fiction gimmick. Sure, it's used in stories, but in real life, it's just... Well, it's impossible. If you're thinking of paying me for some trip in a kind of a... so long.
Wait. I'll even pay you if it doesn't work.
Even if it doesn't work?
That's right.
How much?
$1,000. 10 crisp $100 bills. Here, you count them.
$1,000, huh?
What have you got to lose?
Like this guy was a real crackpot.
Yeah, that's the way I figured it. But $1,000, what are you going to do? $1,000.
Well, then what happened?
Well, I decided to go along.
Naturally.
Well, he took me in another room and he gives me a toga.
Toga?
Yeah, it's a flowing, kind of a loose-fitting garment the Romans wear.
War.
And he gave me a pad of notepaper and a handful of pencils.
How's your memory?
20/20.
Oh, well, come along.
What did you ask for?
You may not be able to use the notepad, you know. My machine will transport human tissue, but I'm not at all sure about other things.
Then you mean that... Hey, wait a minute. You mean it's bathrobe here?
It might stay, yes. And it's not a bathrobe, it's a toga.
Oh, now, wait a minute, buddy.
Well,
what are you
so concerned about?
What am I concerned about? You're talking about plunking me down in the middle of ancient Rome without a stitch of clothes?
Didn't you say you were sure the whole thing wouldn't work?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's right, but...
Then don't worry about it. Well, here it is. Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a doll. This is your time machine?
I prefer to think of it as a chronoporter.
Now, look, buddy, if by some queer quirk of fate this thing works and I am...
Oh, believe me, you haven't a thing to worry about. You see these gauges and dials?
Yeah.
They're set to move you into the Bath of Hadrian, a public bathhouse on a warm summer afternoon in the year 134 A.D. Now, it might prove a little embarrassing if your toga went with you, but not at all otherwise.
You still worried?
Worried? Well, it isn't as if I were actually worried. It's just, well, I mean, a thing like this could never... You don't know how I could...
Absolutely right.
Huh?
Yes. Now, sit right here.
Here? Oh, my dear, traveling through time, it's ridiculous. You couldn't... Hey, what are you doing?
Just strapping you in so you won't fall out.
Fall out? Man, I've fallen off stools, but I never fell off a chair my whole life.
Well, this is a rather special chair.
Hey, now, look, buddy, wait a minute. Take the... What is this, a gag?
No, this is not a gag, and if you listen to me for just a minute, I'll tell you what I'm paying you for.
Well, start telling.
Now, you're about to go on a wondrously fascinating trip, but this is an experiment. Depending on how much success we have with this little journey, we will plan other journeys. To keep your eyes and ears open. Take notes if you can. You won't have to worry about language. The chronoporter takes care of that.
Yeah, but...
Now,
but then...
don't stay more than 12 hours.
Oh.
In the event you want to come back earlier than that, just go to the spot you arrived at and wait. The machine will be turned on automatically every hour to bring you back. Any questions before I pull the...
Yeah. Look, if this is going to be such a wondrously fascinating trip... Why did you advertise for a guy with no friends or relatives? Why didn't you take the trip yourself?
Well, as I said, I mean to put you in one of the public baths, but a few feet one way or the other might put the traveler in the center of a marble pillar.
A marble pillar?
Or a tree.
A tree, yeah. Now, wait just one minute, buddy. Don't pull a thing, because I want to tell you, I'm quitting. Let me out of the thing.
I'm afraid it's too late now. Bon voyage!
Was a sensation I'll never forget. I saw that switch come down, and then things started to get fuzzy, and the whole room felt like it was turning around slowly. First it was slow, very slow, and then it got faster and faster and faster, and then I felt myself holding onto the chair straps, and then all of a sudden the straps were gone, and the chair was gone, and things started to come back into focus. Only I was no longer in the office anymore. I'm hanging in the air about 20 feet over the water in about the biggest indoor plunge I ever saw in my whole life. I remember hanging there while things came back into focus. Everybody was watching me like in a nightmare. Then when everything came into a good clear picture, I fell. Young man, swim over this way. Over here.
Did you see that dive, Tertius?
Remarkable, Senator Greatus. Remarkable.
Here, I'll give you a hand. I'll help you out of the water.
Thank you, buddy.
Oh, I am Senator Greatus. And this is Tertius Aurelius, centurion in the Praetorian Guard.
Pleasure. Name is Ben.
Remarkable dive, citizen.
Yeah, you're telling me.
I wonder if you'd mind telling us just how you accomplished it.
Yes, there seems to be nothing from which to dive which would have landed you in the exact center of the tepidarium.
Boys, you know how it is. If I told you, you wouldn't believe it in the first place, and then after all, it's a professional secret, you know what I mean?
Professional? Well, you're an acrobat.
No, I'm a middleweight, fight game.
Fight game?
Well, he looks a bit small for it, but he probably means he's a gladiator, Senator.
What?
Of course, after a dive like that, Tertius, where else would he have gotten the training but in the arena? Probably the Palestria.
The Palestria? I never heard of the Palestria, but I fought in Pittsburgh Arena a couple times.
You see, Tertius?
Pittsburgh?
And I was pretty well known around the Legion Stadium out on the coast, but I did most of me fighting in the garden.
The garden? Whose garden? Where are you from, citizen?
Originally from Syracuse.
Yes, I've heard of the place.
It's on the coast of Sicily, on the southeast.
No, Mac, it's in central New York State.
Central New what?
Now, just a minute. You boys mind telling me, where am I?
Where you are?
Sounds as if you've had too much wine, citizen.
Well, not lately.
Well. One meets interesting people in the Bath of Hadrian.
The Bath of Hadrian? Hey, then this really is Rome.
This is a very strange young man, Tertius.
All roads lead to Rome, and all kinds travel them.
Mm-hmm. And the year, it's 134... A.D., right?
134! By all the household gods, Tertius, what do you think of that?
Too much wine, what else?
Yeah, well, is it 134 or ain't it?
This is the year of Rome, 882.
882. Oh, murder. Somebody goofed.
Mm. Perhaps a little walk in the sun would help you clear your head. Then, too, you must be uncomfortable in your wet clothing. Let's step out in the sunlight.
Yeah. I'm still wearing this bathrobe. Oh, this is bad. This is real bad. I'm not well.
Might make an interesting dinner guest, Senator.
Yes, let's play a little trigon. Sound him out. You get about 5 balls and we'll start the game, Tertius. Oh, you care for a little trigon, friend?
Trigon? Well, I never heard of it, buddy. But I'll tell you the truth. At this stage of the game, I'll drink anything.
And our hero is going to give himself a little alcoholic buzz there. And
Well, just a little confused, not knowing what 882 is in BC terms, you know?
Yep. You forgot to convert to the calendar of the day.
See, and just like us. You didn't have a guard calendar. Just like us.
It's just like calendars. Our clock is running out. We got to wrap this up, so let's get back to the conclusion of Family Theater at 155.
Well, as it turns out, Trigon is a kind of ball game and not what I'm thinking it is at all. It also turns out that these guys seem to be pretty interested in every word I say, which is a new thing to a guy with my background and my vocabulary. Pretty soon after it started getting dark, the senator wouldn't have it any other way than that I should be his guest for as long as I am going to stay in Rome. Benny Rocco has never been a man to turn down a few free meals. Oh, but I want to tell you, the house was a real surprise. Looked like a museum, kind of. That is, when it wasn't looking like something you'd only expect to see in CinemaScope. Vases 4 feet tall with no flowers in them, pillars holding up nothing at all, slaves running around with nobody chasing them, busts of this guy and busts of that guy all over the place. I want to tell you. Say, nice little place you got here, Senator. How's that?
I believe your new friend approves of your home, Senator.
Pretty elegant. Yeah, and I hope you'll approve of the dinner as well. You know, I remember reading somewhere something about your Roman banquets.
Roman banquets?
Well, undoubtedly you were reading history. They began to decline in favor when Flavian became emperor, and the custom fares as poorly under Hadrian.
You don't say. That's very interesting.
I expect Flavia...
The emperor?
No, my daughter. She was named for him. Mm-hmm. I imagine she's planned a simple meal. I believe she said something about bacon and eggs.
And a few greens from your garden, I hope, Senator.
Well, I suppose there's... Yes, I suppose.
Bacon and eggs in ancient Rome. Man, things are not getting any better.
Father!
Ah, oh, Flavia, my dear.
Daughter?
Hello, Tertius. Hello, Father.
This is his daughter.
And the true master of the house.
My dear, we have a guest. His name is Ben Rocco.
Ben Rocco. Ben Rocco. Isn't Ben the Jewish word for prince? Are you a Jewish prince?
Well, I'm afraid not. It's just a nickname, ma'am.
Nickname?
Yeah, you know, a short name. Make it easy on yourself. Real name's not so good.
Well, what might it be, Ben Rocco?
Got a good hold of yourself, sister? Virgil. My father used to read books.
Oh, that's a venerable name.
If a little misplaced.
How very fascinating.
Our guest is a gladiator, my dear.
And from what he says, a very successful one.
Oh, I've done a little time on the canvas.
On the canvas?
I don't believe we've had the pleasure of entertaining a gladiator before. Oh, you have so few scars.
Well, I'm a little cut up around the eyes is all, ma'am. Had a good training, you know what I mean?
Oh, I think this is going to be very fascinating. Shall we all go into dinner?
Yes, of course, dinner.
Where were you trained, Virgil?
Look, ma'am, I'd appreciate it if you just call me Ben, huh? Well, I guess you could say I did most of my training in the garden.
In the garden? What a strange place
right
for gladiators.
Right from the start, that Flavia and me hit it off, and I can tell you it made me feel pretty good. Flavia's a real doll, and it wasn't long before I was feeling the world as my Eichton. But the longer I talked, the more I noticed that this 30th guy's nose is getting out of joint.
And you predict that someday men will actually fly through the air?
Well, that Greek was supposed to have done it. Now, what was his name? Oh, yes, Icarus. Made wings out of wax. He fly too near the sun, I believe.
Well, it's not going to happen for a long time, but believe me, it's going to happen. Oh, and one other thing. Wait till I tell you about the horseless carriages. Horseless chariots, I should have said.
Bilge.
How's that, Tishus?
Bilge. By Mars and Jupiter, I've never heard such swill outside a drinking bout.
Why say you swill, Tishus?
If you're such a prophet, my friend, tell us who our next emperor will be, or how long the army will be held to only 30 legions.
Hey, look, I'm sorry, but I'm not too sharp on the history of ancient Rome.
Gentlemen, gentlemen,
another
please.
Time you say that ancient Rome. Rome under the Emperor Hadrian is the most modern city in the world, seat of civilization.
Buddy, it was only a slip. I'm sorry.
And I've been watching the way you've been smiling at Flavia. She's promised to me. I forbid you to fiddle her head with any more of your lies.
Look, buddy, I have not been lying, and I'm sorry. I didn't know you two were engaged.
We were promised to each other when I was only 13, Virgil.
You mean you had nothing to say about the matter with this...
But how can one fight custom?
Then too, Citizen Rocco. You say you've defeated 26 men in the arena. I'll call you a liar on that one, too.
Now, most guys couldn't take an insult like that. But a guy who fights pro, well, he kind of gets used to it. A fighter can get himself into a whole lot of trouble in some states using his fists at social functions. I figured maybe Rome was one of these places, so I just kind of smiled and leaned back and said the wrong thing. Look, I don't want to fight you, buddy, and I got a pretty good reason, but if you need one for the record, let's just say I won't fight you because it's, well, it's just not the Christian thing to do. Also, when I said that, he looked kind of funny, like he didn't know whether I was kidding or not. And he turned and stormed out of the palace.
I told you Tertius was a centurion in the Praetorian Guard.
Look, Dad, I got nothing against the military. I was a soldier once myself.
You don't understand, Virgil. Tertius has ordered to arrest all Christians. And you, dear Virgil, are a Christian.
Oh. Well, so it turns out that the senator is a real good Joe. In fact, he and his daughter are both Christians on the sly themselves, and so they're all for giving me all the protection they can. And I'm all for taking it. After all, who wants to be lunch for a lion? Well, they kept me in the house for 2 days, and Flavia, well, she made me want to stay there forever. But along towards evening of the second day, I began to remember something, and it made me kind of fidgety.
What's wrong, Virgil? Are you worried about Tertius?
That bum. No, honey, it's... Well, look, I got something on my mind, that's all. Hey, you want to go out into the garden? Honey, I don't know whether I can tell you about it or not.
Just speak your mind, Virgil. Shouldn't it be easier for you here in the garden?
Well, you see right there, that's part of it, you could almost say. You think I feel more at home in a garden because I said I got most of my training in one. Honey, the garden I trained in was called Madison Square Garden, and it's a whole lot different from this one. You see, we just come from two totally different worlds, honey.
Aren't you happy in this one?
Kid, I've been happier here than I ever been in my whole life. But you see, I made a deal when I came here.
A deal?
Well, an agreement, sort of. You see, a guy paid me $1,000 to make this trip, and...
I don't understand.
I know you don't, but listen. This guy paid me a lot of money to make this trip, and part of the deal was that I was to remember and to tell him all about it. And that's what I gotta do. I gotta go back and remember and tell him about everything that happened.
Oh, I see.
No, you see, you don't see. But believe me, kid, I'll be coming back. But this guy, he gave me something great, and I gotta give him what he paid for. If I don't, I'm just a bum.
Will you come back, Virgil?
Flavia, baby, you think I'd leave you alone with that slob, Tertius? Now, you may be promised to him, but you're my girl, and that's the way it's going to be. I'll come back, honey. Well, I borrowed a few quadrants, that's money in Roman, from Flavia to pay the admission price for the bath of Hadrian. And then I did the hardest thing I ever did in my life. I left her. I kind of stuck to the back streets on the way there to avoid seeing Tertius and his boys, and I was lucky, right up until I was inside the baths and just about ready to climb into the tepidarium tank.
You gladiator, stop!
Uh-oh, think of the devil and up he pops. How'd you find me, Hawkshaw?
I've had enough of your insults, Christian. The name of the divine Hadrian, Emperor of Rome. I arrest you for subversion and treason.
You, figuring on throwing me to the lions, are you?
If I don't kill you myself.
Oh, now look, buddy, I don't want to hurt you. Why don't you just go play soldier out in the backyard?
I'll show you how a Roman plays soldier.
Don't you think you better go get some help for yourself?
That was your last insult. I'm going to kill you.
I want to tell you, this kid comes at me like an angry gorilla. And that's when he made his first mistake. He grabbed out from my throat with his right. I bobs and weaves to the left, hooked him in the midsection with right. He backed up a few feet, and then he rushes at me, swinging with both hands. I popped him a few left jabs, and I felt his teeth breaking under my knuckles. Then one good solid belt right to the note, and I want to tell you, the fight is over. I jumps into the water, swims to the spot where I'd fallen in, and then things began going out of focus, and, well, here I am.
Man, that's quite a story. What are you going to do now?
I'm going back. I told the professor the works. He paid me off, and in a couple of minutes, I'm going to pop upstairs, and he's going to send me back.
Yeah, but what about this Tertius?
Who cares for that bum?
Man, what about the lions? You're a Christian, and then...
What am I going to do, leave Flavia there to perspire it out alone?
Well, sure, yeah. No, what about the date being all balled up?
The professor had things figured out on a Christian calendar instead of a Roman one. You see what I mean, buddy? No trouble there at all.
How about that?
Well, I want to tell you, it's been real nice talking to you, but I better be getting along, huh?
Oh, wait a minute. You sure you know what you're doing?
Well, I think so.
Well, good luck, Mac. I'll keep my fingers crossed for you.
Hey, thanks. You know, you're real understanding.
Well, that the guy walks out of my bar and never saw him again. And I'll have to confess, for a long time, I thought he was punchy. It happens to some fighters, I heard. Then the other day in the library, I happened to pick up a book on Roman history. Ran across the mention of a gladiator named Rocco who lived during the reign of Hadrian. In the footnote, it said that he was unique among those in his profession because he was a family man and also because he never killed those he fought in the arena. Makes you stop and think.
Family Theater is broadcast throughout the world and originates in the Hollywood studios of the world's largest network. This is Mutual, the radio network for all America.
And that wraps up our second feature from Family Theater.
Yep. Good old family theater there.
Anything to learn here?
Nah, I don't have anything to learn except I don't want to be a cauliflower boxer and go into the past.
There you go. And tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern, it's CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Winds of Time.
Another Bryce Bond story for us, the guy that investigates paranormal stories and such.
Ah.
So that ought to be interesting.
That would be Bryce really
Bond
good.
Himself.
Yep.
Yeah, this was a real guy, and these are from his files. So.
And right after our show is Gar the Ghoul. We hope, Miss CW tonight, too. Maybe CW will join us tomorrow. If not, we'll be here with CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Yes, indeed. But a great way to end a Saturday night. I actually have a little Stan Freberg number that will fit right in with what we with the theme for tomorrow's Radio Mystery Theater. So a little bonus to go right along with that.
Oh boy, it's always good to have audio bonuses, which you'll get a plenty here on Erie House. Count them, Dave.
Yep.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Bye, Fogs. Bye,
There's
Bob.
No one left but me.
Bye, guys.
And him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
I'll dig it. Give me that shovel. Give me the shovel. I'll dig it.
I'm shoveling. Yeah. Digby.
There you go.
Digby can dig it.
Your friendly
undertaker.
Yes, he can. He digs it better than I do.
This thing, John Brown.
I need a backhoe to do what he could do.
Yep.
Well, my brother, I do need to book a little early tonight after the show here, so.
Oddly, I do too. Your timing is perfect. Mrs. K needs me upstairs to help her babysit a wild collie.
Well, then don't need to keep me keeping you from your collie.
He gets wild this time of night sometimes, and he's very spunky. So, but Paladin, you gotta wait. You gotta wait for the great one.
Just a few more seconds, because what we need to do right here, Dale, is turn off the house lights. Turn on the three spotlights, so that into the middle spotlight can step the one, Jimmy Durante.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Go tonight.
You want to go? Come on.
What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
Aribo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Whoever.
The foregoing has made it obvious to me that we've had quite enough for one evening. We shall save the rest until next week, when I shall reappear. Until then, good night.